Blog Talk Radio.
Ascending inspires listeners to live life consciously and intentionally by reaching, growing, learning, climbing, becoming, and achieving all that they are capable of. Always Ascending inspires us all to see our life's experiences, the joys and the challenges, as part of our ascension to becoming better human beings. Always Ascending is about purifying and celebrating our life's journeys and our life's experiences. Welcome to Always Ascending. Greetings, everyone. This is Akanke, and you're listening to Always Ascending. I'm so glad that I'm back on the air to share with you the various aspects of becoming self-actualized, the various aspects of striving to be the best that we can be. I've been off the air for a while, but I'm back and excited about all the possibilities. I hope everyone is doing very well, and I wish you all a wonderful continuous journey through all the joys and challenges that life brings to you and indeed that life brings to all of us. Today, we're going to pick up where we left off. We thus far have talked about the first four qualities of self-actualizing people, and today we're going to continue with two additional qualities or characteristics of self-actualizing people. And let me just do a recap, though, of those first four that we've already covered. The self-actualized person has more efficient perception of reality. That was number one. Number two, the self-actualizing person has an acceptance of self, others, and nature. Number three, the self-actualizing person has spontaneity, simplicity, and naturalness. Number four, the self-actualizing person is problem-centered. And so today we're going to pick up with number five and number six. Number five is the quality of detachment and the need for privacy. So, and number six is autonomy, the need for autonomy, independence of culture and environment. So let's go ahead and talk about those two other characteristics, starting with number five, the quality of detachment and the need for privacy. So how it's defined here is that for all of a self-actualizing person's social mindedness, he or she has a need to be by themselves or his or herself and a need for solitude. Self-actualizing people enjoy times for quiet reflection and does not always need other people around them. They can be with the few people that they would be close to or feel close to and not actually need to communicate with them directly. They can be with people but not have a need for a lot of communication. Their presence with the people that are important to them, with the people that they're close to, the presence of those people is sufficient in and of itself. Okay, so basically this is talking about the need to be comfortable with being alone, being with ourselves, and also the quality of being able to be with other people, but not necessarily feeling like you have to engage. So that's the quality of detachment, where you can be with people, but also be in your own space, be in your own peace of mind, and not have to engage a lot. Let's talk about some of the benefits of finding solitude and ways to find solitude. Well, for me personally, to be honest with you, in this age that we're in with technology is impacting every part of our lives, the need for solitude is more pervasive now for the self-actualizing person than ever before. We are so connected to the internet. We're so connected to our smartphone. We're so connected to all of the technology that has developed to this point, and the technology forces us to be engaged more. I'm not a Twitter person, but from what I understand about Twitter, it's like you're always giving people your it's worse than Facebook, I think. It sounds like it is, where you're always giving people statuses of what you're doing right now, where you are right now, what you're thinking right now. Oh my goodness. And it's really scary to me, to be honest with you, how this is being promoted so much. But I need to do some more research on Twitter and find out really what the craze is about it. But anyway, as I was saying, with all the technology that we have these days, there is a greater need to find solitude. So I would say for the main reason that we need to have solitude is so that we can detach and disconnect from those things that pull on us so much through the technology channels that we have. The benefit, of course, is that we have quiet time to hear our own thoughts, to understand what is going on for us more clearly. You know, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of thoughts a day. And we need to take time to filter the thoughts, at least hear the ones that the universe or the creator or God or whatever you call the divine being in your life, to hear the thoughts that we need to hear, the ones that are meaningful in our lives, the ones that will help us to ascend on our journey, the ones that will help us to become more self-actualized, the ones that help us to accelerate our journey or slow it down, depending on what's going on with us. Sometimes there is a need to accelerate, and sometimes there's a need to slow down. But when we quiet down, one of the main benefits is that we can hear our thoughts, plain and simple. And the self-actualizing person is very centered in understanding themselves. So that's one of the main benefits of the solitude. So how can we find solitude? I want to talk a little bit about that. There are many ways that we can find solitude, and I'll just share with you some of the ones that I do, even though I am not doing it enough lately, to be honest with you. And getting back to doing Always Ascending, the radio show, is one of the ways that I'm creating space for me to have solitude, actually. I stay so busy with doing a lot of things, including running my creative design business, Akanke Creative. You can find more information about Akanke Creative on akankecreative.com. But I do design work, I do web design, graphic design. I also am a part of organizations that I give my support and help to through my creative services. So I stay really busy, and I'm married, and I do a lot of things, projects with my husband. So anyway, I'm busy, as we all are, as I said earlier. I don't know anyone who's not really, really busy. In some way or another. So one of the things that I do is to have that solitude is I turn off the computer. In turning off the computer, I also turn off the notifications on my smartphone, my iPhone, so that I can really reflect. Other ways that I do it, the primary ways that I do it really are through prayer and meditation. And I also enjoy just being outside in nature, watching the sunset or the sunrise. I enjoy riding my bike. I just found out yesterday that the kind of bike that I have is called a cruiser, and I was wondering why all the other bikers would be flying by me on their bikes. And I took a chance yesterday and saw someone who was pulling up into his driveway. And I asked him, what's the difference? How can I go as fast as you go? Because I like speed. I want to just zoom around the compound where I live here in Saudi Arabia, because I feel with more speed I can burn more calories and get more places. And I like biking because I can get to see various places and nature and the surroundings where I am right now. So anyway, I found out that I have a cruiser and I need to get a road bike so that I can go faster. So anyway, that's just a little aside. I'm digressing a little bit, but I'm so glad that I found out. Now I have to get a new bike, which I'm excited about. They're more expensive, the road bikes, but I look forward to getting one. Okay, so what did I say? I pray, meditate, turn off the computer, turn off the notifications on my smartphone. I like to go outside, watch the sunset or the sun rise. I like to go biking. I love to swim. And all of these things are ways that I have solitude. Very rarely do I just do nothing except when I'm praying and meditating. That's really the time that I do nothing. But I actually find solitude in doing those other things, like being physically active. And so I'm at a point in my life where I'm really resurrecting Akanke so that I can do all of those things that I really know nurtures me and gives me peace and solitude. Another thing that I love to do that I'm also really excited about doing more of is writing and journaling, especially journaling. Journaling is a very powerful way not only to have time to yourself, but also to really put those thoughts on paper. And then when you distance yourself from them, let's say in a few months, and you look back at what you've written, or even years, you know, after you've written something and you look back at it and you see the clarity that you had in that space. Because journaling requires that you are authentic, because it's a very private thing. And usually when you journal, it's just for you. You don't share your journal with others. So it's really a time for you to let it all out, the good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent, et cetera. So I really love journaling. And I love what it reveals to me. And I love how it continues to reveal. It's the kind of exercise that keeps on giving. Because you can, as I said, you can go back to it and see your thoughts and be inspired by them. Be inspired by the clarity that you had at that time. Especially if you're going through something in the present moment. It could be just what the Creator sent to you to be able to look back at your journal and be a way to support yourself. It's sort of like you being your own best friend and you being able to give yourself the kind of advice and counsel or direction that you need. It's really a beautiful experience. So what are some of the ways that you find solitude? I'd like to know that. So if you are listening and you want to share some of that with me, or if you want to post something in the chat window, or if you would like to send me something on Facebook or by email, my email address is akanke715@gmail.com, and my Facebook account is facebook.com/akanketiamoya, and you'll find all of that on my homepage. Okay, so we've talked about solitude, which is quality number five, and the way that it's articulated in this particular, in this list that I have, it's the quality of detachment and the need for privacy, and I'll read it again. For all their social-mindedness, the self-actualizing person has a need to be by him or herself, or a need for solitude. Self-actualizing people enjoy times for quiet reflection, and they don't always need people around them. Self-actualizing people can be with few people that they would be close to, for example, and yet not need to communicate with them because the presence of those people is sufficient in and of itself. Okay, so we'll go on to quality number six, or characteristic number six, which is autonomy, independence of culture and environment. And what this says is The self-actualizing person is capable of doing things for him or herself and making decisions on his own. He or she believes in what he or she is doing. So that's pretty straightforward. That's pretty clear. Self-actualizing people are generally go-getters, if you will. We have the characteristic of wanting something and going after it. The quality of being able to seek out resources and also be resourceful, but that's another quality that is coming up later. We are very independent in our thinking also in terms of being able to connect with our own thoughts and be comfortable with being grounded in those and sharing them authentically with other people so that we present an independent thought that is channeled through our spirit, through who we really are. And before I got on the path of consciousness and became a person who is intentionally seeking self-growth and self-development, I was not always comfortable with what I thought, and especially with sharing them. But one thing that I learned is that people are only as comfortable with us as we are with ourselves. And when I learned that, when I saw that quality in other people, that really helped me to just get there very fast, because I definitely wanted at that time to engage in life in a way and to engage with people in a way that I knew I was comfortable and natural and authentic and genuine, and that they were impacted by that in a positive way. And especially, I believe that we are all teachers and students at the same time, right? So when we are being authentic, when we are being independent and genuine and able to think for ourselves and do things for ourselves, we teach other people how to do that as well. And at the same time, we are learning from other people who do that well. So the beauty of life is that we are all teachers and students at the same time, and we need to choose our teachers and students wisely, because everyone cannot be your, we all have our chosen teachers. Everybody in our lives actually is a teacher, but there are certain ones that really help us to get to the next level. And sometimes, and usually those are very positive experiences, people who really inspire us, who motivate us, who support us. But there are also people who are, in a negative way, very much our great teachers. And we learn as self-actualizing people that we are each other's mirrors. So people are always mirroring something to us that we need to reflect on about ourselves, and to, if it's something we don't like in the other person, that it's a quality that is somewhere in us. And this is something that I learned when I did a lot of self-development work back in 1989, when I first really embraced the understanding of self-discovery and self-help, which I've talked about that before in my early shows, but I can tell you a little bit about that again. But basically, my journey towards self-discovery and becoming a self-actualized person happened when I went to a seminar. I was invited to a seminar by a friend, and the seminar was called Creating More Loving Relationships, and I thought it sounded like a good title. It sounded like something that I was interested in and could benefit from, and so my friend and I went together, and as soon as I arrived, I knew I was in the right place because the vibes were wonderful, and I'm a very, very much a person who feels. A lot of my experiences are centered in what I feel and what I sense intuitively. And so anyway, I knew I was in the right place. And the seminar might have lasted about an hour and a half. It was an introduction to some of the other programs and seminars, the longer seminars that that particular group offered. And it turned me on to the art and science of self-discovery, which basically is the journey of thinking of our ideal. Let's think of we have an ideal person that we are capable of becoming and that we are meant to become, and we have the real us. So there's the ideal, and then there's the real. So if you imagine the ideal is at the top and the real is maybe, you know, beneath that, some distance beneath that, then self-actualization and self-discovery is the journey from the real to the ideal. And the real doesn't mean that it's bad or anything like that. It just means that you are striving to get to the ideal, becoming better in various ways that you can, and getting back to quality number six about being independent. You get turned on to the ways that you can do that. So you independently seek out resources, whether it is a seminar as I went to, or a book, or a course, or traveling, or spiritual work, or connecting with people, or joining an organization, or going back to school, or what have you. You put yourself on a trajectory that is guided by you independently, because it's guided by your desire to grow and become better. And it just sort of propels itself. And one thing, one wonderful discovery, one thing grand leads to another thing grand. And everything is not grand, so I always have to balance that, because on the journey of self-discovery, sometimes it can be very painful in terms of discovering things about yourself that are not good and that you need to change. And sometimes the difficulty that we can encounter in changing those things, I'm trying to think of an example for myself. I just think for me, my challenge was having confidence in myself. Okay, we just got disconnected, so I'm glad that I'm back, and thank you all for your patience. So I was saying that I think my biggest challenge was to really just have confidence in myself and in my abilities, and to see the talents that I had, and to see really what others saw in me, to see the greatness that other people saw in me. It wasn't that I thought I was bad or anything like that, but I just didn't see the greatness that was in me, because I just was not nurtured in that way, if you will. I had self-doubts and a lack of esteem. And at the time that I embarked on my self-discovery journey, I was about 26. And so that at that age, you have this foundation that's been embedded in you. And so ever since I discovered self-discovery and started working on myself, the journey has continued and it will never end. But give thanks to the Creator. I am, light years ahead of where I was, and still on some level I'm struggling with old things. They come up sometimes when you least expect them. For example, one thing that I'm dealing with or have just recently dealt with is emotional eating. And so we accept the challenges when they come, and through our own independent resources and hopefully through solitude and reflection, we find out what's going on. We're able to sort of solve the puzzle of what's going on with us. So, and if anyone out there is dealing with emotional challenges, something in your life that may be challenging you, death in the family, relationship issues, loss of job, just brokenheartedness or lack of love or just whatever the challenges are. Find time for yourself so that you can reflect on the things that are going on for you and write them down. Free yourself from the hurt by writing about it. One thing that I love to do when I'm going through something is I go through this three-step process. I sit down and write a letter that's really expressing the anger that I have about the situation. And it's all anger, and I let it get all out. If I have to call names, I call names. I'm writing it down, but I'm calling names. Whatever it is, so that I can actually get it out of my body onto paper. That really, really helps in a big way. The second thing that I do is I do the opposite. I write all the warm and fuzzy, loving things that I can write about the situation, whether it's a situation or a person or whatever. I write down all the wonderful things, really get in touch with my heart and the things that I love about it. Because usually when we're angry about something, it's because it's something we would love to be a certain way, but it's not a certain way. So we just get in touch with both aspects of it. The things about it that makes us angry is the first part. And the second part are the things that make us endeared to it, the things we love about it. And then the third process is to actually sit down and write a balanced letter, either to myself or actually to the person if it's involving a person. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to give to them, but it's the kind of relationship where you can, where you do have open communication or where you have the kind of communication where you can give it to them and they would receive it, then definitely do that. And the third letter is a very balanced letter because you've given yourself an opportunity to write all the angry thoughts and then write all the loving thoughts. And you've gotten those out, and then you can see more clearly what the situation is, what your issues are, what your concerns are, what your thoughts are, and then you can articulate them in a grounded way. So that third letter is a grounded jewel of your thoughts about the situation, and that three-step process has really helped you to get there. Because as I said earlier, we have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of thoughts a day, and a range of emotions too a day. So, you know, we could feel happy one moment about something and something totally different that, you know, bothers us. But anyway, it's good for us to do the journaling, to do the writing, to do the letter writing, and to do those kinds of things that give us solitude and reflection and to be progressive enough to know what we need to do, to use things that we know in our toolbox to be able to heal ourselves. So thank you, everyone. We have about 30 seconds left, so I'm going to close out the show, and I want to thank everyone for listening. I'm glad that I'm back, and I look forward to the upcoming shows. Next week, we'll go over the characteristics of 8 and 9, the mystic experience, and, 7 and 8, the freshness, continued freshness, and the mystic experience. Okay. This is Akanke. And I'm glad that you listened to the show today, and I look forward to reconnecting. Peace and blessings. Always Ascending inspires listeners to live life consciously and intentionally by reaching, growing, learning, climbing, becoming, and achieving all that they are capable of. Always Ascending inspires us all to see our life's experiences, the joys and the challenges, as part of our ascension to becoming better human beings. Always Ascending is about purifying and celebrating our life's journeys and our life's experiences. Welcome to Always Ascending.